You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die. This episode we'll be talking about Ministry, Psalm 69, The Way to Succeed, and The Way to Suck Eggs. In the room I have Ann.
Fuck yeah.
And Rob.
Woo!
And on the line I have Ben.
Present.
And Kyle.
Never trust a junkie.
Ministry, Psalm 69, The Way to Succeed, and The Way to Suck Eggs is the fifth studio album by the American industrial metal band Ministry, released on July 14th, 1992 by Sire Records. It was produced by Al Jorgensen and bassist Paul Barker. The genre is industrial metal. And I'm going to read from the book, Andrew Tiaz. If the earth ever opens and black skies rain fire, at least be content in knowledge that you have the soundtrack for Armageddon in Ministry's sixth studio album, Psalm 69. Conceived by heroin addict shaman Al Jorgensen, and the more enigmatic Paul Barker, the album is a teeth-grinding barrage of relentless beats borrowed from industrial music, shredding guitars, and eerie, despotic sampling of air raid sirens, pulpit bashing, and chilling goth choruses. How such a jarring album infected public consciousness deeply enough to sell platinum can mostly be attributed to the lead single, Jesus Built My Hot Rod. This was virtually a novelty cut on an otherwise brutal and disturbing doomsday concept album. The opening track, New World Order, is a marching song for bloody revolution. The controversial video for the pounding Just One Fix featured a junkie in withdrawal and a truly idol, William S. Burroughs. The title track is a demonic juxtaposition of militaristic and evangelical chanting. Ministry's high priest, Jorgensen, had as much sneering contempt for power mongers as he did for Middle America. Culture of muscle cars and mind-numbing television. This opus is in turns hulking as it is sharp as a razor. Like a nihilistic evisceration, Ministry's music blasts away all extraneous hyperbole and leaves nothing but dread and raw synapses. Forget Marilyn Manson, nothing in U.S. music has sounded so monumental, apocalyptic, and purely wicked as Psalm 69. All right, what do we think of Ministry, Psalm 69, The Way to Succeed, and The Way to Suck Eggs?
You know,
this is one of my fucking favorite records. This album changed little baby boy Kyle at a formative age, and I am forever in its debt.
Just a duster appeared on you like after you heard this.
Sure. I listened to this album on cassette on the way to Kings Island.
Whoa.
On a like a middle school trip.
Really good day.
Sounds like a great day.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I love it.
Who's new to this?
Has just the power.
I'm new to this.
To crush.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hey, Ben, what'd you think, Ben? New guy?
Eh.
Yeah?
Right. Yeah. But you know, it's not really the record. I think that this isn't my genre. I don't think I'm that into industrial metal.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, nobody's perfect, but like,
I like dynamics. I like progressions. This album,
there's a lot of dynamics on this record. I feel like,
well, it's either on or off. It's like the volume is right here, or they'll cut it away. I like
that's Ministry, baby.
I like when they do that, because if they didn't do that, it would just be right here the whole time. Like I said, I don't know. It's not the right audience. It just grinds away. It just grinds away for the whole 45 minutes for me.
Can you think of a time in your life when, Ben, when you would listen to this record and it would hit you a little harder than it does now as a...
No, because I was the right age when it came out. I didn't hear it back then, but like, I also like, in the 90s, I wasn't that into Nine Inch Nails. Like, I didn't get the industrial shit as much. I liked
That's what hit me melody. About this the most, I think, is how some, like, the listening to the similarities to Nine Inch Nails, right?
Mm-hmm.
I knew some Ministry, but I hadn't listened to this album, like, all the way through or anything. And I really, really enjoyed it.
Oh, you liked it, man?
Oh, yeah. I haven't spent a lot of time. I'm new to metal, you know?
Sure.
Or the metal I heard when I was young was very different from, like, the thrash stuff that I found out that I really like, right?
Yeah.
I was at the age when when I first heard this as a youth, I still, like, was like, am I going to go to hell for listening to this? Yeah. Like, the song Scarecrow, I was like, what? There's another song where it's like, drinking the blood of Jesus, drinking it straight from his veins. Like, I was like, am I in danger?
Yeah. Like,
that's what you're doing at church, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was a little Catholic boy, you know? I was like, oh.
And that's another thing. As a guy in his 40s listening to this for the first time, it's just, I think it's just the nature of the era of, like, sure, the 90s. To me, it felt like it was very edgy without actually saying anything that interesting.
Hmm.
It was like,
did you look at the lyrics for TV too?
Oh, the connect the fucking dots.
Yeah,
yeah, I've got a star by that one. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
I mean, because some of that is, like, at the time of this album versus now might be different, right?
Yeah.
Like, the things that were being said in this album, if you were a kid in the Midwest or something, you'd be like, shit, yeah.
Yes.
I have not heard this in any other context. Like, the internet is pretty nascent at best in 92, right? Like, when...
Absolutely. I was still on the internet, but...
In 92, the stuff that... The edgy stuff that I heard on, like, the self-titled Rage Against the Machine album very much resonated with me. Like, they had shit to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got absolutely nothing against Ministry. Absolutely nothing against. And with each repeated listen, I'm finding more stuff I like about it. But, like, my first few listens, though, it just seemed like the mad at dad edginess, like, to like blanket strokes. Just like, just.
No, I picked up on that.
Just angsty, you know?
Mm-hmm. I just, like, I remember, like, and I don't want to make this every time I contribute to the podcast, it's me as a a middle school child, but, like,
that's the era we're in, though.
Yeah.
Eventually you'll just be a 20-year-old.
Thanks, Ron. Thank you, Ron. But, like, I remember listening to this and just, there was a show on local TV called Night Flight. Have we talked about Night Flight on here before?
I don't think so.
Night Flight would show at, like, 4 o'clock in the morning. And it was, like, this, like, counter culture, like, variety show that had, like, weird alternative stuff before MTV kind of, like, latched onto alternative stuff. But I remember, like, staying up super late to watch them talk about acid metal and Ministry. And I was, like, 12. So this is, like, cool. This is, like, a fun little, like, little club. And, you know, God, I'm saying that only middle school people should be into this record, but.
Nope. I'm into it.
No.
I'm very
yeah,
into
this
it.
Record, like, Scarecrow, like, track one, side two. Scarecrow is, ooh, doggy.
Yeah, it's essentially When the Levee Breaks by Led
Thank
Zeppelin.
Thank you, Birch. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And it holds up. I will say it definitely holds a candle to, like, When the Levee Breaks. It's reusing it, but at the same time, it creates something
huge.
It makes it
an atmosphere
massive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what really propels this album is just how it goes for the jugular. Like,
yeah,
there's
it does,
nothing like holding this back. And that's,
it never slows down.
No, it's not subtle.
It's
not aggressive.
No.
And that's the thing that, like, for me, metal is opera, right? So it's like a form of opera, which means it's, like, overblown emotions. Everything is, like, 10 times bigger than it's supposed to be. This is, like, so much faster, so much more, like, heavy hitting, like, the whole time, right? Like, this one right now, TV2 is, like, they just played a demo of, like, as fast as they could play. And then it became this track.
That's so good. I'm sorry.
Rob, are you tapping for tempo?
I think it's 180 beats per minute.
Yeah.
This record is so much...
Does it remind you of Suicide? Does it have that kind of edge?
Not at all. No.
It just sanded off?
This is much tougher than Suicide.
Mm.
the
it's different than Suicide.
But like
it's different than Suicide.
It, this is way tougher than Suicide.
Disagree.
100%.
Suicide made it affected me differently. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh no, you're
yeah, I like this conversation.
No, I'm not a fan of Suicide. So I enjoyed this one better than Suicide. There was Nine Inch Nails came out with Broken the same year.
Mm-hmm.
Broken ended up beating out Ministry for like best live performance. I think Wish beat out NWO. For best live performance?
Best metal performance.
Okay, best metal performance.
Wish.
And, dude, this record's so much better than Wish. And Wish was a fucking, like, a five-song, like, throw-off.
Yeah, it was an EP.
Yeah.
Wasn't Trent Reznor Misery's roadie? Or Ministry's roadie?
Yeah, he was.
Yes.
Ministry's much abused roadie, much hazed, much abused.
I'll show you guys.
Check this out. Yeah, fucking did it.
One day I'll be Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah. No, dude.
He fucking did it.
And dude, like that shit, like, I forget what fucking documentary I was watching, but like that sort of abuse just continued down the road. Like, I think it was the dude from Filter. Was the roadie for Nine Inch Nails who didn't get paid, so he didn't pay his roadies because that's the way that he came up.
Like, they're just paying forward the roadie abuse?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, what the fuck? That's fucking terrible.
I forget what documentary I was watching, but yeah, I was like, man, everyone's an asshole. This sucks.
Speaking of everyone's an asshole, this sucks. We're listening to Ministry here, and this is their anti-war song about soldiers.
Is this Hero?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I love this record so much.
Okay.
The riffs are unstoppable.
The riffs never stop, Rob. They're so angry. And they don't...
They're quite angry.
It's so aggressive. Yeah, it's so fast, so aggressive. Yeah.
You'd think that someone with that much heroin in his system would be less angry.
I'm glad you brought that up, Ben. I never, like... went behind the scenes for this record until recently for research for this episode. And to be a fly on the wall.
Dude, that Revolver
for the recording of this fucking record.
Seriously, dude.
Is wild. Such a quality product came out of what
So this one has the like blank spaces, right? Where it just stops.
Yes, this has a full, what is called a gate.
Yeah, the gap.
So, Ben, what did you think of that? Because to me, what interested me...
I loved
it. It was so interesting in a percussive way and, like, the way that it, like, amplifies the virtuosity. So, did you like that?
No, actually, my notes for this track says, every part of every song is the same volume, but those gaps are really cool.
They're discombobulating, yeah.
It's dynamics. Uh-huh. I like dynamics.
Yeah. I thought that was really effective. It was really interesting. Do you know like about
those are a true cut in the music. So typically within music, you would never put those in because they sound artificial. They don't have a natural resonance that music has.
Mm-hmm.
But since they're dealing with extremities, all they do is pull like it's like a full gated cut mm-hmm. in it. And they just cut out that section of music and then just put the next section of music. No one ever does it unless they want that effect to sound completely unnatural.
Yeah, it's wild. I really liked it.
It sounds like someone just hitting the mute button, pausing it.
Yeah, it's cool. It was like the first, like on my first listen, it was the first thing that grabbed my attention. Mm-hmm. Like four songs in of just like packed in heavy riffs of the same volume, but just fast riff. Loud. It was that gap that made me be like, oh, what's this? I need the dynamics.
Yeah, but I mean, do you not find that in sort of odd time signatures that they're providing? So they're not sticking strictly to 4-4 on a lot of these songs.
Like the complexity of the...
Yeah, the complexity of...
The time signatures.
Those things.
Yeah, and with repeated listens, I could definitely get to appreciate that. But like on my first listen, my ears were just hearing just a wall,
a wall of
grind. Yep. You know,
of awesome shredding,
which I believe was power. The intent.
Yeah.
So it works.
You scratch but that's up just not that what wall,
I,
Ben.
That's not necessarily what
virtuosity.
I was
virtuosity
looking but, for.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus built my hot rods in 5.
Oh, dude, so Jesus built my hot rod.
Are we talking about Jesus built my hot rod yet?
We're listening to it.
Yeah, we're talking about our ears right now, bud.
Go ahead, Kyle.
No, I'd like to... No, please proceed, Ben.
All right, I'll be quick, then you can dump your love. I had never
Please
heard...
don't refer it to it.
Ew!
I'd never heard this song when it was released as a single. I heard the song for the first time this week.
Oh my God, Ben!
Yeah, I thought it was really
what a
cool.
fun, sexy time for you.
It was
Jesus built my hot rod. And you're
it was
in your
the first
fucking
track
40s?
On this album that I put a star by. I was like, okay, this is cool. I didn't realize it was Gibby Haynes.
Yeah.
that was the issue too. But that makes sense. But then also, I was like, if it hadn't been for Jesus Built My Hot Rod, would we ever get to Bawa Taba?
Ooh.
I don't like this line of thinking.
Oh, no. That's like a really good point.
Wow.
Shit.
Wow,
you just fucking cracked
the
code.
Questions.
Damn.
Yeah.
Now go for it, Kyle. That's what I wanted to say.
I'm sorry to bring you back to middle school. I'm promise this will be entertaining in some way. Yeah, in middle school, I took summer classes to get them out of the way, you know? And I took like a gym class to get out of the way so I wouldn't have to. And I was in eighth grade, you know, right between eighth grade and freshman year. And I was picked on. I was bullied by a trio of bullies. And they had Ministry shirts. And I was like so sad because I love Ministry too.
Did you try
so
to
one day,
like make friends with them because of their shirts?
Yeah, one day I was like, soon I discovered that this rock thing was true. Jerry Lee Lewis was the devil and Jesus was an architect previous to his career as a prophet. Like, I just laid it on him, like, please stop beating me up.
Did it work?
It did work.
Yes!
Okay. It did
also,
work.
Also, I fucked those dudes, but also...
And then, a year later, awesome. I ran into those dudes at a Toys R Us. Like, they were, like, a comical, like... They were, like, the bullies on The Simpsons. It was, like, Jimbo...
They were working at Toys R Us or they were buying toys?
No, they were just like hanging out there and they saw me, but I had long hair and a Ministry shirt and they were like, what's up, buddy?
Of course.
I'm sure this this is what everybody comes here for, right? My Ministry bully stories from middle school.
It's why I show up every week, Kyle.
When you say 5/4, are you saying it's the 4 is because the drum beat is just like 1, 2, 3, 4, and then the guitar is throwing the 5 on it?
Yep.
All right, cool.
He had to chop this up. I'll read the story
quick. It's fucking insane.
Gibby came, this is from Jorgensen.
This is Butthole Surfers, man.
Yeah, Gibby came in absolutely shit face. He couldn't even walk. We set him on a stool, gave him a microphone with a fifth jack, and he played this thrashy redneck rock track we were fucking around with. Gibby babbled his incoherent nonsense, knocked over the whiskey, and fell off the stool. We propped him back up again and tried again. Bing, bang, ding, dong, wang, wang, bore. He slurred shit like that for a while and then crashed back on the floor, and we went like that for take after take and got nothing but gibberish. With a few discernible words like baby and gun, trailer park, around, why. Finally, Gibby passed out, and it was up to me to turn all that blabbering into a track. It was like pulling a diamond ring out of a septic tank. I edited the song on my 2-track at home. I spliced so much the tape to make this gobbledygook sound like words. Even in my fucked up state, I had rock steady hands to conduct delicate brain surgery. I cut tape all night long, and 3 weeks later, it started sounding pretty good. I added these samples about drag racing, put in these crazy backwards effects, race card sounds, a thrash beat, guitarist riff. Mikey added these wild blues solos. Then I added the nonsense spoken word intro to go along with Gibby's moronic lyrics. This was at the time They had already got a $750,000 advance on this album.
What did they do with it, Birch?
They spent a lot of it on drugs.
Whoa. They shot it right up their arms.
That's right. But at this time, the record company was asking for a track. They were basically asking for the album. And they gave them Jesus Built My Hot Rod. And the record label says, what are we supposed to do with this?
What the fuck are you doing?
They hated it. And it was like, well,
you tricked us.
Either double down, double our money, or cut us loose, and we'll go somewhere else. So
double
they
down, baby.
Took the bait and doubled down, which was cool because we actually got the record company to pay us $1.5 million to make this fucking record.
For this fucking record, that's crazy.
That is crazy.
$1.5 million? That's insane.
How much of that $1.5 million do you think actually went into recording costs?
I mean, at least half of it went into heroin, right? Like, the first advance, they basically were like,
yes.
We have done all these drugs. I'm doing this in my house because.
And when they got their second advance, I don't think they quickly sobered up. And
no.
I think
you don't think they did? That's so disappointing to hear.
Yeah. Jurgensen said that, what was it? They had the expectation that the follow up to The Mine is a terrible thing to taste, their previous one became a big hit. And they wanted it to be as big as Michael Jackson's Thriller. Thriller. They expected Ministry to produce Thriller.
They were on a lot of drugs.
No, this is the label, though.
They were also on a lot of drugs.
They were on
different drugs.
Yeah, okay.
Different drugs.
Different powders.
Mm-hmm.
I just cannot conceive of Sire Records being like, yup.
Fucker went platinum, dude.
It did go platinum.
I mean, it's great. It's fantastic.
No.
Yeah.
Not to harp on much here, but like the song lengths are substantial on a few of these tracks. The one that's in our cans right now, Scarecrow, comes in at 8 minutes and 21 seconds, and it doesn't feel like it. Like that's the.
It's a delightful dirge.
I mean, we were talking about stereo MCs before, and I don't find myself checking the clock on any of these things. And it could just be because it's all fucking like up-tempo, like stuff that I'm used to. But man, like one thing this record did teach me is like, I've been thinking entirely too much about drum programming. It doesn't take much.
Yeah.
That's for all you drummers out there.
drum programmers.
Is this the only Ministry album in the book?
Yeah.
So I was looking at their past, and in the early 80s they were a synth pop band.
Did you check out their first record?
I did not, but I hoped maybe NFG? Some of you had and could called? Like speak upon their synth pop. The photograph that I saw on Wikipedia was hilarious.
It's a bunch of roses.
It's called With Sympathy.
Yeah,
I listened to a few tracks. They're pretty cool.
Is it good?
No, I remember
the tracks I listened to, I enjoyed.
You know, I remember like back in the day being a Ministry fan since I was 12, tracking down that With Sympathy?
Yep.
With Sympathy.
I was like, what the fuck is this?
With Sympathy?
But I also loved it because I was into Depeche Mode and shit.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah.
I was shocked that was Ministry. I was like, are there two different bands with the same name? There is no Wikipedia.
Wait, they called it Ministry? I will be.
Yeah. They were still called Ministry. Yeah.
They evolved into this sort of industrial metal.
Sure. I mean, it's like the early 80s was that, and then by the late 80s they had like broken into this industrial metal stuff. Like.
Sure, but I think they found a lot more connections with what was happening, working with Whack Tracks in the Chicago scene, doing...
I mean, it's crazy to think that fucking Songs About Fucking came out in 87, and like this shares... so much in common.
Right.
But this is also a follow-up to a Land of Rape and Honey, you know, like.
Right. They didn't get here all at once, but this definitely was the prime time. And I will say, for as much as the, you know, we're kind of laughing about how much money was put into it. I mean, it sounds really good.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And Birch, you know, like I was so young listening to this record. I have the shock of recognition when I heard It's All Right, It's All Right. That's from Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I remember seeing that in the theater and being like, oh my God.
It's Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, there's tons of stuff. Just One More Fix has samples from Sid and Nancy.
Absolutely.
Hellraiser 2, Hellbound, and
what's the
Man with the Golden Arm.
Mm-hmm. The Psalm 69 sample, the Blasphemer sample. I know.
Oh, I don't know, but that does have a sample from Suspiria.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's that makes sense.
It's the blind guy. What's he say? Stop it!
Yeah. And this is, you know, I think a lot of rock musicians were looking at sampling because DJs, hip-hop, like, that was used to great effect. Mm-hmm. And so we're getting, like, White Zombie and Ministry doing that in a different...
A vernacular?
Different context.
Yeah, different context.
Yeah.
So that... You know, it's like those late night B horror movies. It's, you know, this stuff is becoming, we're getting into that sort of postmodern self-referential of our own culture. That
White Zombie,
They were
speaking
creating.
Of White Zombie. Does Rob Zombie send Al Jorgensen like monthly thank you checks?
Hey, he should. God
he really
damn it,
should.
Now White Zombie did start in 1989, so it wasn't.
They at least were contemporaneous.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, one to one.
And it was, their initial stuff was before this album had hit.
Nothing happens in a vacuum, everybody.
No, yeah. it's a whole.
But at the same time, your evolutions. Point taken.
Yeah, for sure.
How much do you want me to talk about this album? Because I have plenty of those stories to
can
tell.
There's
tell
a
you
lot.
About...
Yeah, the recording of this album is a. I would watch a whole documentary series about it.
Well, I'm not going to talk about the recording of the album myself. I'm just going to go straight into the where it got its namesake. I've got a copy of Aleister Crowley's The Book of Lies in front of me, and I've flipped to Psalm 69, The Way to Succeed and the Way to Suck Eggs. This is the holy hexagram. Plunge from the height, O God, and interlock with man. Plunge from the height, O man, and interlock with the beast. The red triangle is descending tongue of grace. The blue triangle is the ascending tongue of prayer. This interchange, the double gift of tongues, the word of double power, abracadabra, is the sign of the great work. And for the great work is accomplished in silence. And behold, is not the word equal to Cheth, that is Cancer, whose sigil is the sigil that I'm reading right now? This work also eats up itself, accomplishes its own end, nourishes the worker, leaves no seed, is perfect in itself. Little children love one another.
It's about 69ing.
Yep.
It's by Aleister Crowley, who fucking loves 69ing.
Oh, he was a power bottom for the most part, he loved cum.
Okay.
It took me a few days to get the pun in the title.
Yeah, suck seed.
The way to suck seed and the way to suck eggs.
That is the name of chapter 69 of that book. That's what you just read, right?
It's all true.
Which is a reference to 69ing.
I have been listening to this record for 30 fucking years and I never knew that was the subtitle. I was like, oh, that's vulgar. I recognize the quote from this song we're listening to. Which one is this?
Psalm 69.
Psalm 69, dude.
Yeah, Psalm 69.
Oh my God, the intro to this.
The way to
the
succeed
choral
or
stuff?
The way to. I always thought it was sacrifice.
Mm.
For the past 30 years. I was doing research and I was like, it's what?
It's the lampooning of Christianity, which is also what Satanism is about.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I remember listening to this as a child and being worried that I was going to go to hell.
Yeah.
This and Gwar.
Well, you still might.
Same here.
So don't worry.
I mean, you don't even know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Reach number 15, Billboard 200 chart, certified platinum. Amazing.
Huge.
Talk about the recording a bit. They relocated after they were having problems with drugs, obviously, to Shade Tree Studios in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. Barker's aim was to get Jorgensen away from Chicago drug buddies and into a healthier, more productive environment. But he miscalculated Jorgensen and Scotia's willpower Barker said, quote from Jurgensen, Barker was too stupid to find a place more than 90 miles away, Jurgensen says. So me and Mikey just wound up driving the 90 miles twice a week to hook up with our dealers, jonesing all the way there, risking getting arrested on the way back. We had a couple close shaves with the law where we pulled over and hid our stash behind the ashtray, popped the vents out, put our stuff in there, and clicked it back, and just as the cops were up to us with a flashlight. 90 miles.
That Rube Barker. That Rube. You're going to have to take us further away than Wisconsin if you want us to actually complete this record.
I can get drugs in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You can hear it on this record. You can hear it.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Lake Geneva is beautiful, though. Let's pause for that.
Blasphemers!
Praise Jesus!
Yeah.
So I guess that's from the film of The Pit and the Pendulum, that sample.
That's a fucking classic. Vincent Price is in that.
It's great.
Yeah, there's a lot of samples in this.
Also, you guys were talking about Jorgensen having Trent Reznor as a roadie before.
As a whipping boy.
Yeah, as a whipping boy before. He actually went on tour with all the others, Lollapalooza, 1992, with, you know, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam. I mean, the who's who, right? Rage Against the Machine, Ice Cube, Red Hot Chili Peppers. He did try and go backstage to congratulate, you know, Trent Reznor on the good show and everything, but he ran into Rollins, Henry Rollins, our old friend.
Al Jorgensen did?
Yeah.
And what happened?
When he saw Henry Rollins, Rollins was like, we don't want it. I know you're a junkie.
You want to fight, bro?
Get out of here. And essentially,
I hate fucking junkies.
Yeah, he said, I hate fucking junkies.
Aggro Rollins protecting
TV party
Reznor
tonight.
And Jorgensen just clocked him in the face, knocked him away. This is, of course, according to Jorgensen. But he said after that, Rollins and
the most trustworthy of all narrators.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, totally.
He said,
Rollins, junkie.
Just didn't bother, you know, they didn't see each other or speak. So
stop making
this out. Is the interesting thing about that, too, is we were just talking about Rollins and Sonic Youth. And I can completely see the link, right? Because he had just been in a situation where his buddy got shot.
In the face, getting robbed.
Oh, getting robbed. And this guy is thinking, you know, if I had to surmise, I'm thinking, hell, he doesn't want to be around anybody who's like has the sort of like a problem that's going to cause something like
aggro
this.
Aggro person that might have a weapon.
Yeah.
And I read that interview with Jorgensen where he was talking about like he knew that Rollins liked to show off his muscles on stage, but didn't know if he could actually fight. Like, spoiler alert, he can.
Yes.
Henry Rollins can fight.
But if you clip him just so,
yeah,
he'll fall.
If you catch him off guard and knock him down and then everyone runs in and breaks it up before he gets back up. Then
one would suspect a junkie of fucking just like throwing a punch.
That's very true.
Well, I mean, unpredictable.
I will say, yeah, that's one of the reasons that I feel like Black Flag had to break up because Rollin would, he said he would go to these shows and then people would literally just fight him.
Yeah.
Because they expected him to fight.
Yep.
And he fought them back. And that's it. He's like, I just cannot continue to do this.
If you're going to just try to fight me all the time, I can't be in this band anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's great. Hey, this song we're listening to, Corrosion, right?
Yeah.
I swore up and down that there was a Super Nintendo commercial for this. Featuring this song for the game Uniracers. And
dude,
I
love the game Uniracers.
Yeah, it's a great game. But they had like a crazy hard metal alternative song to promote it. Because at the time, Nintendo was getting dogged by Sega for being like...
not extreme.
For
enough.
Babies?
Yeah, for being
yeah. So Nintendo said, we're going to play it loud. They showed footage from Uniracers, and I thought it was the footage of this song. And it might have been, but I can't find evidence of it. But because it was 30 years ago, they also showed footage of Uniracers to Who the Hell Was in My Bed Last Night by the Butthole Surfers.
Whoa.
Weird.
All right.
I don't know about Uniracers, but the video game composer Frank Klepacki cited Psalm 69 album as the primary influence in creating the soundtrack to the 1995 video game Command and Conquer.
Okay.
Oh my God.
There you go, Kyle.
Beautiful.
I feel vindicated.
A bit of a longer story, so I'll try to keep it really brief. So they wanted to use the clips from William S. Burroughs for one more fix. Wary of a lawsuit, the label tried in vain to reach Burroughs' camp, which delayed the release of Psalm 69 by 2 months. When Burroughs' manager, James Gruntholz, read an article in which Jurgensen explained the delay, he became incensed and tracked down Ministry's frontman. Quote, he called me and said, nobody asked us for the sample clearance. We never said you couldn't use that stuff. As a matter of fact, why don't you come to Lawrence, Kansas, meet Bill. He lives here and we'll do new stuff. Thrilled at the idea, the band representatives from Ministry, label, and management, and the video crew headed to Burroughs' home to record new audio and shoot the video. Everyone arrived in time except Jurgensen. He was 3 days late. Quote, there was a couple reasons I kept... yeah.
That's really late.
There was a couple reasons I kept Bill waiting. He explains, first, I had to finish up Revolting Cock's mix that I was already late doing because it had just been working on Psalm 69. More problematic to Jurgensen were the travel plans. He had been booked for him. He was scheduled to fly out on the 23rd, but he refused to take the plane because he was superstitious.
He had a lot of...
about traveling on that day.
Excuses.
So Jurgensen comprised and agreed to travel by car with a friend to Chicago. We stopped off in Kansas City, knowing we didn't have enough dope to last us our trip. Jurgensen says we figured Bill would probably want some. We went to this ghetto neighborhood and drove around looking for someone on the corner or something. We got chased out by the cops. It's pretty obvious what we were trying to do. We said, fuck it, let's go to Bill's house. We drive to Bill's, knock on his door, and he answers. First thing he says, are you Holden? He didn't even say hello. Then he said, I can smell a junkie a mile away. We only had enough to keep ourselves from getting sick, so I was like, no. He slammed the door in our face. Figuring the key to the admission at the Burroughs estate was smack. Jurgensen drove 35 miles to Kansas City, cruise. And again, he found a kid who sold him $800 worth of heroin. Pleased with this success, Jurgensen headed back to Burroughs' house. We knocked. He opens the door and is like, oh, it's you again. He knew he had to do a video with us for just one fix. He already agreed to it. We're like, no, no, it's different this time. We scored. We're holding. Bill says, come in. We go into Bill's living room. Right away, he goes to the bedroom. Bill was like a giddy little kid because his manager, James, usually prevented him from using... he was on methadone. He wasn't shooting. He hated coke. But James was sick at the time. Bill goes in. He brings out this like Pulp Fiction 1950s leather belt with 1950s needles. Really old school. It was comical. We had our little normal needles. And he had this elaborate setup. We all shoot up, pass out for a while. Haven't said anything to this guy. And he hasn't said anything to me. Then I wake up, I see a letter from the White House, the fucking White House, on his table, unopened. It was like, Bill, you got a letter from the White House. He's like, so what? It's junk mail. I said, are you going to open it? He says, no. I asked if I could open it. He said, whatever you want to do. So I open it, and it's a letter from Bill Clinton saying he wanted Bill to come do spoken word at the White House. I was pretty impressed with that. I was telling him, and Bill says, who's the president now?
Yeah, who fucking cares, though? He's fucking right. Jesus.
He didn't know who Clinton was. He had no fucking clue. He didn't give a shit. When I read him the letter, he was like, oh, I've never heard of Bill Clinton. And he said he wouldn't go, and he never did. Uninterested in contemporary politics, Burroughs spoke at length about his garden, griping about the raccoons who was destroying his petunias. He said he would try and shoot the animals with a pellet gun, but they always got away. He wasn't allowed to own a real gun because he accidentally shot his wife back in the 50s.
So accidentally, supposedly.
Yeah. So he was trying to kill these raccoons, but the Pelican didn't fire fast enough. Jurgensen says, Bill, you're on the methadone program, right? And he said, yeah, so what? And he said, well, why don't you put out methadone wafers for the raccoons to eat? And then they'll slow them down enough, then you can get them with your pellet gun. That was the end of the conversation. Jurgensen and his friend headed to the hotel for the video crew. They started shooting just one more fix. When Burroughs wasn't there, 4 hours later, he arrived with a broad smile on his face. He said William Burroughs was the grumpiest bastard I ever met. He never seemed happy with anything, but he was in great mood from the moment he walked in. He comes up to me and says, you're an astute young man. Your idea was magnificent. I shot 2 stone raccoons today. Right away, it was on Bill's friend list, and it was a short list. And all because he took my suggestion of feeding these raccoons methadone wafers so he could slow them down and shoot them. Up until the time of his death, he would call me about once a week, and we'd talk. The real reason for his call was to bitch at me for doing coke. His exact quote was, why would a person do a drug that keeps you up all night twitching? Stick to heroin, kid.
Classic grandpa statement.
Naked lunch, baby.
I still cannot believe, if Jurgensen and fucking William S. Burroughs just died of natural causes, I don't understand it.
The universe is chaos, my friend.
I guess so.
Everything is chaos. Yeah. Ministry is awesome.
Ministry is great.
We agree?
The song that beat NWO... We talked about it earlier. Wish beat NWO for best metal performance. Wish comes in at a blistering 124 beats per minute. NWO comes in at 161 beats per minute.
Okay.
I don't know how fucking broken beat out Psalm 69. This is killing me on the inside a little bit.
Really?
I don't get it. I simply don't get it. Like an EP beat
is
out.
Is something faster automatically better?
I think, no, you're absolutely right there. But I think patently this is a better produced and recorded record than Broken.
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that.
Did you listen to Broken side by side with this one?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, because I listened to it this week.
Man, so did I. And I found this one to be a way better listen.
Different, though. Reznor's playing with different things than Jurgensen.
Different ideas. Okay.
Yeah. There's different ideas. And I think... to speak to Ministry's strengths, they are with things like thrash metal, and with that industrial edge. And I think Nine Inch Nails plays with the more.
Well, he's a little synth boy.
Synth, yeah. Yes, is directly hard synth with industrial.
And I gotta say, my bread and butter.
Yeah, yeah.
But as a bread and butter boy, yeah. I think that this one is patently better.
Okay.
Call me crazy.
Nope.
Or whatever.
No, I think argument for both.
It's strange that we're only getting Downward Spiral in this.
I find that interesting
very
too.
Very weird, yeah.
Pretty Hate Machine. It would have been easy.
It's an insane double. It's incredible.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's strange that... I don't know, but back to this. This record is, I'm just going to say, in Kyle's absence, unassailable. Mm-hmm. And a towering masterpiece.
Yeah.
And I come in as a total positive on it. I enjoy this record entirely too much. And I never gets old. And I started working out at the gym again. And this is good workout music.
Yeah.
This is great workout
music. Totally.
I will say that.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. Ben?
Medium. Medium from Ben. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's a good album. It's just not for Ben.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Total positive for me. I love the sort of, I like extreme. Yeah. It's like give me the Napalm Death, right? Like give me the thrashiest you think you can thrash and
get in there.
Just do the most extreme thing that you think you can, but can still be like audibly enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And I'm here for it. So this definitely loved the continuation of I had never listened to Killing Joke before. And when, you know, when we started the project, once we got to that, I was like, oh, here it comes. Oh, Ministry. Shit. Yeah, here comes yeah. Nine Inch Nails. Here comes all this, where we're going to get to. And this is kind of that, you know, having all that and very 90s thing, too. I don't know if we're going to get a big representation of this sort of industrial rock, industrial metal within this book. If I've flipped through it and it doesn't seem like we're getting it. Too much, but this is definitely a welcome place or welcome album for it. Yeah. Love it. Just the samples are icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
just
really
the
good.
Splicing and kind of creating those sound effects.
Birch, did you see Ministry live?
I did see Ministry with Primus and Slayer.
Me too. Yeah.
It's a good show.
Yeah. It's fucking good.
Very good. All right, next time we'll be talking about Tori Amos, Little Earthquakes. Thanks, y'all.